It is September 21st, Friday. This is the Legislative Council, Alaska Legislative Council. If it would stop raining and the clouds would rise, it would be another beautiful day in the interior. We have first order of business is to call order. Ms. Gissel, if you would.
Representative Klayman?
Here.
Representative Edgman? Representative Edgman? Representative Quito? Representative Millett?
Here.
Representative Ortiz?
Here.
Representative Stutes?
Here.
Representative Drummond?
Here.
Representative Eastman?
Here.
Senator Coghill?
Here.
Senator Gissel? Senator Hoffman? Senator Hoffman? Senator Kelly?
Here.
Senator McKinnon?
Here.
Senator Machicki?
Here.
Senator Costello? Vice Chair Stedman? Chair Rettenberg?
Here. Thank you. It appears sometimes that when we call people's names that there's some background noise as if they're trying to get off mute and get online. If that's the case or anybody gets online, I expect them just to join in. We are in a non-traditional place for this meeting. If we have to go at ease, we have to manually go up and turn the microphones off. And members online, your phones are not muted. You can just join in as you want to. So with that, with approval of the agenda.
Mr. Chairman.
Madam.
Mr. Chairman, with open mics, could we make sure that those that are online don't put us on hold if they have to leave the room because we get music sometimes that then delays the entire conversation?
Good point. Thank you. Did you hear that, members online? Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council approve the agenda as presented.
Is there discussion? Are there changes? Thank you. Next is the approval of minutes for June 26th and August 6th. If there are no comments, we'll do it as one motion. Are there any corrections or additions or changes? Hearing none. Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council approve the minutes dated June 26, 2018, August 6, 2018.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is ramification of charitable events.
Mr. Chairman, brief at ease.
Brief at ease.
I think that you need to say, is there any objection?
Okay. There was a suggestion I have to say without objection, but I think I have to do a roll call for every vote. That's correct? So please call the roll for the approval of the minutes on both meetings.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Kelly.
Here.
Yes.
Senator Machicki.
Yes.
Chair Gutnick.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that reminder.
10 yeas.
Moving on to item number four, the ramification of charitable events, the Kenai River Classic and the Kenai River Women's Classic. Ms. Geary, do you want to tell us, come to the podium and just brief us on what that is? What are we doing that?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jessica Geary, Executive Director, Legislative Affairs Agency. The chair has authority to ratify charitable events before the event takes place, and then they bring it back before the full council for approval, and it allows for lobbyists to give tickets to legislators without facing any ethical consequences. So it's been a long-standing practice.
And there's nothing new with these two events?
These two events have historically been sanctioned every year.
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council ratify the chair's sanctioning of the following charitable events per AS24.60.080A2B. That's AS24.60.080A2B, the Kenai River Classic, the Kenai River Women's Classic.
Are there any comments or discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Kiesel, would you announce the roll, call the roll?
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Senator Machicki? Senator Machicki?
Yes.
Chair Guttenberg?
Yes.
10 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. It passes without objection. The next order of business is the LIO staffing. Mr. Powers, would you come up and
thank you, members of the committee. For the record,
first let me make sure, does everybody have Mr. Powers' memo dated September 8th this year, information and teleconference budget? Okay.
Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, Tim Powers, manager of information and teleconference. Molly has wonderful minutes from the last meeting. I'm happy to talk about anything we discussed at the last meeting if anyone would like a refresher or to go into more detail. We did.
Could you just bring us up to what we're doing and just give us the short highlight of the memo?
Yes, sir. At the last meeting, we had a motion in front of you to close the Unalaska LIO and reallocate its funds to restore the half-day Fridays, which Legislative Council reduced our hours by a couple years ago. We did close the Unalaska LIO, and due to quorum issues, the motion did not carry for restoring the positions to 12 months from 11.3. Since then, Senator McKinnon had asked about our funding situation. Last year, we did lapse $190,000. That's in addition to the money that was freed up by closing the Unalaska LIO. So if everything stays the course, we would be lapsing $296,000 next year if spending stays at current levels.
Okay. Representative Millett? Oh, I'm sorry. And we did, when the discussion of this motion last meeting, we did talk about bringing it back up after we had a better understanding what the budget numbers were and keeping the LIO offices consistent with what the rest of the legislature, for me, is, if for many times it is the interface between the legislature and the public. And as much as we can do to facilitate that interface, I think, is a good idea. Is there any discussion? Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that we spoke about this extensively, and we're hearing a modest rendition of what happened at the last meeting. Under the leadership for legislative staff, they have done remarkable things to reduce costs and to try to hold their budgets in line. And they did bring forward an LIO for closure, which I greatly appreciate, and they have saved money. My only concern as an outgoing legislator is that next year the team will still face budget cuts, and will they be able to present a budget that is reduced because we still have a larger budget deficit, which is the reason that I came to your office to say I couldn't support the expansion, because I believe that then we're just putting it on the next legislature to come in and cut something else. And so I'll leave it at that. But the public needs to know that this team has went above and beyond, both in storage savings, in I can't remember all of the different points that were made at the last session, but they really have done a good job in to try to bring folks up. And the memo talks about staff turnover that I read, and staff turnover increasing quite significantly in the area where, and I'm not going to get it exactly right, but in 9 years they'd only seen a few people turn over, and in the last 2 years with the reductions they've seen double-digit turnovers everywhere. And so it really has become an issue of trying to retain staff. And so I do commend the division, but I believe that, you know, we're going to face a budget deficit, and the legislature will have to find cuts. And where will the legislature find cuts if we expand back out? So it certainly is with great respect to the work that's been done and demonstrated. I just am concerned about how they will bring forward on behalf of the legislature as a whole. And we'll have a discussion later about per diem that could impact the legislature's budget. And I just can't vote for an increase at this time. And I said that last time. Thank you.
Senator.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Powers, the memo does speak about how the reductions have negatively impacted employee morale, causing greater turnover and things like that. But my question is, and remind me if we've already testified to this, but what kinds of things aren't happening as a result of the reduction that was made that used to happen?
We have not cut any services other than the fact that the offices are closed after noon on Fridays.
So, in essence, an argument in favor of restoring to a full-time is not that more will get done. Is that kind of what you're saying?
More would get done in the fact that there'll be more time available to do work, and we'll be interacting with constituents for an extra half a day during the week. But we have not reduced what services we offer as part of the budget cut. It's just the amount of time in the week that was reduced.
Well, is there any documentation? I mean, logically, I don't know how much documentation you need, but logically there's going to be less opportunity for constituents to come to the LIO and to interact with folks at the LIO. But is there any, do we have any documentation of concerns raised by constituents that they have less access to offices and things like that?
We haven't heard directly from constituents because we're not there in the afternoon. It would be your staff would be the ones who would be fielding those calls in lieu of us.
Well, if I follow up question, they're not there. My question is, as a result of them not being there in the afternoon, have we heard complaints because of that?
The complaints that we've heard have been from legislative staff and other members of the Legislative Affairs Agency who want to schedule meetings on Friday afternoons. The Lieutenant Governor's office is using us for the Ballot Measure 1 initiative hearings, and the Friday afternoon closure became an issue with their scheduling.
Okay.
They're actually meeting right now or at 10 o'clock in Sitka, and they had to juggle the schedule based on our closure.
And at noon, this place goes dark on Friday afternoon. It's locked. It's dark. There's nobody here. There's no interface. Public comes in. they don't find the that office open where they come to, they start wandering around the building looking for an office. And for me, it is a logical thing to keep the public interface open the same hours that everybody else works. Any other suggestions? Any other comments? I understand.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Yes, a question for the director. Question on implementation. If this proposal is approved today, what will be the impact on any staff who might prefer to stay under the current hours? Is that going to be optional for them, or is it going to be obligatory? And if they, you know, aren't in a position to accept, or are they going to have to resign?
Through the chair, I have prepped all the staff. They are fully aware that they may be working past noon today or not, depending on how the council votes. At this point, no one has expressed desire to stay on the current schedule.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I understand, Representative Edgman is online also, so thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, again, in response to the good work that this team has been doing, I wanted to read the final paragraph on a memo that's dated September 8, 2018. The budget reductions have negatively impacted employee morale and retention, which is a huge issue for the division. Not only did full-time employees have lower paychecks, but the reduction also negatively impacted their retirement. For an employee in longevity, it would take two-step increases over 4 years' work to get back to their annual salary before the cut was implemented. And then on page two, Mr. Chairman, attrition has been roughly 20% during this time period of implementation. Since the budget reduction, there have been 14 vacancies in information and teleconferencing. Of those vacancies, 10 have been from the information officers' positions across the state in less than 3 years. Prior to that reduction, there were 8 vacancies in 9 years. That's what I was referring to before. I just wanted to get into the record because staff has provided for those who may want to support your recommendation, good documentation as to how the department and the division are having to deal with the legislature's cuts. And I think it is fair to say that when constituents show up and the doors are closed, I know my office specifically received an email from one constituent, not mine, but was standing outside of an LIO and trying to get in to testify and could not and didn't know where they were supposed to go because they didn't have the teleconference information. My objection is purely on what you're going to face next year and not the actual need of this for the community. It's just everyone who is going back needs to recognize we still have a budget shortfall.
And I want to thank Speaker Edgman on his support for closing his hometown's LIO as a result of somebody retiring and the usage of the LIO by itself. Without that, this wouldn't have been possible, or this discussion wouldn't have been practical. Any other discussion? We have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council rescind its action in failing to approve the restoration of 17 positions currently budgeted for 11.3 months.
Just call the roll, please.
Representative Clayman?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Millett?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Stutes?
I want to make sure I'm clarified on this motion. Is this appropriate?
Yes.
So a yes vote means it would go back to a 5-day week?
A yes vote now rescinds the motion for the previous meeting that said no. And after this vote, we have to go back and actually vote on the motion to stay open.
The motion.
So this is two motions.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yes.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
No.
Senator Machicki? Senator Machicki?
Yes, I'm sorry, I was on mute.
Chair Guttenberg?
Yes. So, and thank you for bringing that up. It's a two-motion process. Thank you.
10 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you.
Excuse me, I stand corrected. 10 yeas, 1 nay.
We have a brief Eddies for a second.
If that's a correct tally.
Senator, we're back on the record. Senator McKinnon?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council restore 17 positions currently budgeted for 11.3 months to 12 months effective immediately.
Ms. Kessel, please call the roll. Oh, before we do that, is there any discussion? No discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. Is just a question, not there, but just is there room for somewhere in between the full restoration and what was done before? Can someone just get that on the record with an explanation for me?
Go ahead, Mr. Powers.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the council could do what it wishes with the hours, and we could slide from a four-hour Friday to a five-hour Friday to a six-hour Friday. Anything but a seven-and-a-half-hour workday will still have the disparity amongst the agency with the staffing.
Senator, does that bring, Machicki, does that bring some clarity to your question?
Well, it does. I guess what you're saying is that not all staff would be on the same hours, and that's where the problem is arising. Is that my understanding?
That's the big part of it. Mr. Powers, do you have another comment?
Can you repeat one more time, please?
My question was, my understanding of the problem is that not all staff will be treated equally, and that's part of the morale problem. Is that correct, hours-wise?
That is correct. When you expand it beyond just the LAO, the disparities between the LAO and the rest of the agency, the entire LAO staff section would be treated equally amongst itself. We would not be increasing certain employees' hours with leaving others at a 34-hour work week.
Okay, last question, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator.
What is the actual cost differential between the previous action and if we approve this action?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, the closure of the Unalaska LAO was freed up $106,072. Restoring these positions costs $107,664, roughly a difference of $1,600.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman?
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman here.
Yes, Representative Edgman, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my question would be perhaps for the council to discuss or for Mr. Powers to address. How do I tell a constituent of mine who says, well, look, the court system is closed on part days on Fridays, but the LIOs are being allowed to stay open, and it's not all LIOs around the state because that was recently stated. We had to close the Unalaska LIO down. The Dillingham LIO is 6 months a year. I realize that these are rural communities with fishing seasons and some subsistence activities and things that don't necessarily draw people to the LIO during particular times of the year. But, you know, I'd like to hear some discussion about the relative importance of having the court system being shut down on Friday afternoons versus the LIOs being able to stay open.
So it's my impression on the court system that everybody in the court system, from the Supreme Court Justice to the Clerk One, has taken that cut, and not certain people or certain level, but the entire court system. as compared with this one. We're trying to have some bring parity back across the agency, right? The Supreme Court justices and the clerks have all voluntarily have done that themselves.
Well, if I might follow up, apparently there has been turnover in the LIO staff because of the change. I just want to be able to put this sort of into the proper context, because I also agree that budget cuts are coming down the road, whether it's attrition or whether it's positions not being filled. So I guess I'm, in some respects, I'm supportive of this, but in other respects, I'm cognizant of the fact that this might be the reality facing not just the, LIOs, but a lot of other state agencies going forward as well.
And to answer your question and your concern, I agree with you, and I think it's important that that to fulfill the function of the legislature and its information offices across the state, that somewhere along the line that every school and every library has the capability to stream and interface, and I think your district is doing, your hometown is doing some work to make that happen, and I think Mr. Powers is working with the Dillingham Library to facilitate the ability that would be available, that every community could stream and just simply go into the library and do that. And I know there are some hindrance to that I've been working on for a while, and I know Senator McKinnon had a bill to deal with some of those issues. But I think the streaming of information and the ability to interface from every town and every village in the state is critical, and hopefully we'll get there at some point. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Edgman, his basic point, I think, is a good one. And while I understand that there has been issues related to retention and those kinds of things for the LIOs, that doesn't address the issue of how, we look at what's happened with the court system, with them losing Friday afternoons, and when I think about the impact of that in relationship to the justice system, I'm not so sure that we can say this, that there's this equal impact that's happening with the LIOs in relationship to constituents and those kinds of things. So I understand the argument about the impact on the LIOs overall and parity within that system, but I'm still not convinced that the impact on society or the impact on our constituents is that big of a deal in relationship to the courts being closed for Friday afternoons and those kinds of things. So that's where I'm struggling a little bit. And again, with, I think Senator McKinnon has a very good point that we still have this budget deficit, and that's not going away. And yes, the Unalaska closure would make up most of the costs of going to full-time Fridays, but that could potentially be savings as well, rather than just making up the cost. So I'm struggling with this one a little bit, because I'm also very understanding of the need for the, to improve the retention situation in the LIOs and the loss of benefits, and that's very real. And, I've heard about that from my own person who represents, who's the LIO person down in Ketchikan. So I consider that strongly. But when we think about the court system and other areas where we've seen reductions, I just don't know that this reduction is having much more, I think it has less of an impact on our society than the court system does. Does that make sense? Anyway, I'm struggling with it a little
okay.
bit.
Mr. Chairman, I would just say
Senator?
The court system isn't before us. We're not going to impact the court system one way or the other. So your vote isn't going to impact.
True. That's true. That is true. That's true.
Any discussion? Anybody online?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator?
Maybe one of the questions that should arise is, I know that during, when we have legislative hearings, quite often we do them on Saturday. We have run committee meetings into the evenings. What has been the economic impact of that over against this half-day closing? And does it create a scheduling issue? Because one of the benefits of being a legislator is the power to convene. And we have used that broadly in many committees. So has there been an impact on the scheduling based on that? Or is there a cost overrun because of Saturday meetings? Give me a concept of that. Because I think as we get into the budget cycle, there is more tough stuff to do when we get into the legislature. There's no doubt about it. But it's also true that this is probably one of the megaphones that the general population has to use to voice their opinions on all of our priority discussions. So help me understand how the Saturday meetings and the evening meetings have impacted this.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, all of the LAO staff in the information officer positions are salaried. If they have to work an evening or a weekend, they take comp time and take the time off at a later date when it's convenient for the schedule. We do have reserve hours, a casual labor pool, which is used to hire people on an hourly basis, non-benefited. That pool has been significantly slashed as well. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it has been reduced by two-thirds. We have run into an issue where we've had staffing problems because we don't hire reserves like we used to. In the past, if we go back about 10 years, reserve staff were given a bit of a set schedule so they could count on work. They knew they were going to work Tuesday and Thursday afternoons. That was the time that the office was going to open up for advertised increase staff, so we would get people in the door. The regular schedule for those reserve staff doesn't happen anymore, and some LAOs don't even utilize a reserve. I know the Bethel LAO does not use an LAO reserve, so when the staff takes leave, the office just closes. So we have had less coverage because of the reduction in casual labor, but it is putting more burden on the full-time staff to be in the office on those evening and weekend meetings.
Just a question before we get to Senator Kelly. What happens at noon today around the state, the LIOs? Do they shut down? They shut the doors? They turn off the audio?
Mr. Chair, yes. As of right now, at noon, all the LIOs will close.
Okay. Senator?
You know, one of the things that has been a theme of mine for years is that we're the board of directors, and we make a mistake when we try to micromanage. And I think the best procedure for us is to tell Jessica, you manage this the way you need to, and there may be more cuts coming, and you're going to have to manage those as well. All we can really do is give them the amount that we think we can afford or not. How they manage, we've got to leave it up to them because they're the experts, and they're going to be accountable to us, and ultimately we're accountable to the people. My recommendation is that we go forward with this vote and just trust our people.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Hoyt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one quick comment, and it just seems to me that we are closing down one LIO in one district to the benefit of every other district. And I question the equitability of that. I know that if had the LIO being closed down been in my district, I might not be so kind as I am saying it right here. But I think that's a real consideration when you're totally wiping out one to the benefit of everyone else. I question that.
So let me. We are not closing one LIO to open the others. There was a situation, if this vote fails, that LIO doesn't stay open. That's not the situation. We're closing one to do this. It's not a tit for tat. There's a gentleman that's retiring, and the situation was whether we hire somebody new out there with a pay differential. And if we don't do that, then the money's available because that situation is happening. Not let's close that one to do this. That's not the situation. Is that correct, Mr.
Through the chair, that is correct. The Unalaska LIO was closed at the last meeting. We had a vacancy. It was also due to underutilization. They had zero teleconference participants all last session. So it was not just a vacancy that spurred that decision. It was also a lack of use. At the last meeting, we had a discussion with the speaker about providing services still in that city, in Unalaska, and I have reached out to their library there, and we're working on coming up with a pilot project to house materials. There's questions on how much space we want them to provide us for our publications and documents, how much staff time we expect them to use. So there will be some give and take as we explore how to do this in this one library. But the goal is to still provide services there through libraries in existing city government. Hopefully we'll expand that to a higher level in the future for other rural communities that are not connected to an LIO.
I hope that gives some clarity. We're not doing one thing to do another. One thing was happening that made available funds to do something else.
And, Mr. Chair, we did have the funds that we lapsed would more than cover the restoration on top of closing that LIO at the last meeting.
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, and I would point out at the last meeting, the lapse funds were because of cost-saving measures under the leadership of the team that is testifying before us today in looking for cost-saving measures. So they've identified a problem. That was staff turnover. They identified and started implementing different tools that were under their control to manage and are coming to us asking for the restoration, knowing that next year's budget cycle may face something different, but they are still trying to do that, to do additional cost savings for the people of Alaska. Mr. Chairman, what was talked about, too, was a LIO in a box, basically, that Mr. Power just referred to that. I would just ask you to look beyond the libraries and look at our university system that already has telecommunication capabilities, as well as the state funds. I know we fund libraries, but we fund a significant amount of money to the university, and they have sometimes larger setups that can take more people. And so I hope that we don't limit, as we do an overall review of LIOs across our state and their utilization, because it wasn't just low utilization at this particular one. It was in conjunction with a retirement that that this was cost savings. And so there were others. I think Kotzebue was part of that list, and there was another one that we talked about that when we saw the graphs last time that there was some issues with utilization at some other LIOs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead. Who is this?
Thank you. It's Representative Drummond. On the phone in Anchorage, I'm watching you guys on my computer screen, but I have the computer sound muted because there's at least a 20-second delay between when we open our mouths and when it happens on the screen. And I don't know what kind of impact that would have on the public participating, but I'm trying to put myself in the public's shoes if I was to be weighing in on an issue and trying to participate from a remote location. I have some concerns about the amount of turnover since it has increased substantially since the cuts have been made and new positions, new folks have to come on. I'm a bit concerned about the, how they acquire the experience and the skills to manage the LIOs when there is such a shortage of experienced folks. And I'm not quite sure what my question is, but is there an impact in terms of getting people up to speed when there's such an increase in turnover? Also, I'm a little bit confused about the, I see that the total amount of funds that have been saved over FY16 and 17 total approximately $650,000, but it will cost us just $107,000 to restore those closures. I'm a little confused as to how there is somewhat of a savings, but the savings is not. It's not clear to me. I guess I have to see. I have to see it across a spreadsheet. What's the reduction in 1 year, and the proposed increase? Should we vote to restore it?
Mr. Chairman, this is
one more question, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Representative Drummond and then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. I am not aware of the number of staff in each of the LIOs, and if there is illness, I think I did hear Mr. Power say that when a staffer has to take leave and there's nobody else, the facility simply closes. And I was going to say, if there's illness, is there somebody to substitute if it's for a longer term? Thank you.
Mr. Powers, is something there you want to address, or are there questions?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Drummond. The figures you were quoting, the cuts in FY16, 17, the 358 and 298, those weren't savings. Those were budget reductions that we handled in-house, the FY15, FY16 numbers were handled in-house. It was FY17 when the LAOs were closed that council made the decision for us on how we were going to handle our unallocated cut that was given to us through the budget process. So those, the list of savings, if you go back to the memo that from July for the last meeting, on page 3, there's a list of efficiencies that we found in-house to save quite a bit of money. For the training and the experience, we do, in not all LIOs, we do utilize the reserve staff. So if there's an illness, they'll call in their hourly person if they're available. We have had situations in this past year where we've had family medical leave issues come up. In one case, the office was closed for 2 months while that issue was dealt with. In one case, we had to hire an additional reserve person to come in and work hourly to keep the doors open as much as possible. We do want the doors open. We're not going to close them if we don't have to, but family medical issues come up unexpectedly, and when that happens is not the time to go look for someone to try and hire them and train them to get them in the office just to keep the door open.
And I may have misspoke earlier. I may have said that the Dillingham LAO is closing. It is not closing. It's on Alaska. Senator Hoffman?
I'm in favor of the proposal.
Okay. If I can add one more thing, Mr. Chair. Senator McKinnon, through the chair, when you brought up the university system, we did have one staff member from the Anchorage LAO who left at the time of these budget cuts to work for the executive branch and work for a 37.5-hour-a-week job. She's now term faculty at the university in their library department, and I was in contact with her last week, and we are going to talk this coming week about how we can pull in the university system as well to this.
Senator?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clarify, we do have a motion on the table.
Yes.
And the motion was to move the Legislative Council restore 17 positions currently budgeted for 11.3 months to 12 months effective immediately. You did note that Senator Hoffman has joined us online. Just wanted to clarify, we have a motion on the table.
We have a motion on the table. We've had plenty of clarification. Without anything else, please call the roll.
Representative Klayman?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Millett?
No.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes?
No.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
No.
Senator Machicki?
No.
Chair Guttenberg?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hoffman?
Senator Hoffman, I'd like to change my vote to no.
Six yeas, six nays.
And the motion fails. Thank you. The next order of business is the contract approvals for the Homer, Eagle River, LIOs, and the Hayton Associates Security Camera Amendment. Molly, will you please come up? So we'll do one at a time, one lease at a time.
For the record, my name is Tana Strong. I'm the procurement officer for the Legislative Affairs Agency. For the Homer office space, the original lease agreement between the Legislative Affairs Agency and Clayton L. and Joan E. Ellington for office space in Homer, Alaska, was for a three-year term that began November 1st, 2012 and terminated October 31st, 2015. There were five additional renewals of lease available under the lease agreement, each for a one-year period. We have exercised three of the renewal options. Renewal number three of lease expires on October 31st, 2018, and we would like approval to proceed with renewal number four for the period November 1st, 2018 through October 31st, 2019. This is a standard renewal, and if Legislative Council approves renewal number four, this will leave one more renewal of lease available under the lease terms before we must issue a bid or do a lease extension. This lease exceeds $35,000 in one fiscal year. Therefore, Legislative Council's approval is required, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anybody? Any questions? I haven't talked with Senator Stevens, but I talked with Representative Seaton. It's just doing business normally in the place where they've normally done business. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Legislative Council approve renewal four of the lease for the Homer office space in the amount of $59,889.84.
On the table.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drummond, may I just make a comment?
Yes, please. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. I just want to point out the, I don't know what to call it, irony here of cutting staff or keeping them at a reduced level and then approving lease space, which doesn't change, and we certainly don't... We don't seem to ask for a reduction in the cost of the lease space because employees are occupying it for a percentage of time less than they used to occupy it. And that's a problem in that the fixed costs do not fall, but the personnel costs do. And that's where the services come from, is from the personnel, not from the physical facility. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Senator, would you like to make... You made the motion. Ms. Kissel, would you call the roll?
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Senator Machicki?
Yes.
Chair Guttenberg?
Yes.
Twelve yeas, zero nays.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the Eagle River LIO office space. Ms. Kessel.
Through the chair, the original lease agreement between the Legislative Affairs Agency and Rabat LLC for office space in Eagle River, Alaska, was for a five-year term that began November 1st, 2012 and terminated October 31st, 2017. There were five additional renewals of lease available under the lease agreement, each for a one-year period. We have exercised one of the renewal options. Renewal number one of lease expires October 31st, 2018, and we would like approval to proceed with renewal number two for the period November 1st, 2018 through October 31st, 2019. If Legislative Council approves this renewal number two, it will leave three more renewals of lease available under the agreement before we must issue a bid or do a lease extension. This lease exceeds $35,000 in one fiscal year, therefore your approval is required, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question.
Representative.
Thank you. Can you tell me how many, Senator Faircloth might can do better, but there's just three legislators in the Eagle River? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, there are four. We have Senator McKinnon, Senator Hughes, Representative Reinbold, and Representative Sadler.
Okay. And then my next question is there room in the Anchorage LIO if that LIO got closed and moved those folks, given the option to either Wasilla or go to Anchorage?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, I have not been involved with discussions about the Anchorage LIO, so Representative staff might be able to answer that.
I think the answer is about the Matsu LIO, but the Benson building would have space.
And I think as we go forward, I think, you know, we're seeing rural Alaska get some cuts to their LIO, and they're moving to, you know, seasonal LIOs. At this point, I mean, we should probably talk about consolidating Eagle River to Anchorage. And I think it's a little bit of a difficulty for some of the constituents out there, but it is a cost savings, and it would be something that I think the legislature or the legislative council should really take a look at. Is it beneficial to have an Eagle River and an Anchorage? Technically, that's all the Anchorage borough, Anchorage area, municipality. So I would entertain a discussion about what is an exit plan for that Eagle River LIO.
And I'll recognize Senator McKinnon, and I recognize that Representative Reinbold is online also. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have been in discussions about relocation into that square footage. The issue of this lease renewal is twofold. The Anchorage LIO is going to be in a construction mode for some time, and depending on what Legislative Council does, you may or may not have Anchorage legislators not having space inside the current facility depending on the construction going forward. And so the reason that I requested consideration for this before Legislative Council, again, is twofold. One, because of the construction happening at the Anchorage LIO and the displacement and the cost to relocate our offices multiple times, because you would be, there are two of us that are exiting out of that office. And so you would relocate us into Anchorage for 6 weeks and then have to relocate and remove us as we shut down those two offices. And then there's the issue of two new legislators coming in at a minimum in the office space this time, and they should be part of the discussion in that conversation. And then I would say that this is not an LIO. It's not an LIO that is staffed like an LIO. This is office space like the Homer office space. We are a city of 30,000-plus individuals, and the highway for us to get into Anchorage on a round-trip basis is 34 minutes just on the highway to get there. And so we have constituents as far out as Eklutna Flats that are trying to access in a safe manner, and so it just creates difficulties on the highway if you've driven it. It's not as simple as going from a simple 5 miles. It can be quite challenging. So our staff has taken on the janitorial on a volunteer basis to reduce costs. I know this team has tried to reduce the actual lease cost footprint there. I think it's up slightly over those years. But for those reasons, I ask that that we renew for the year and then let the future legislators from that area engage in a discussion with Legislative Council about relocating to the Anchorage LIO for cost savings or something other. As you know, Representative Millett, I was heavily inside the process when we purchased that Anchorage LIO and talked about consolidation of other state lease space. And to that end, under Jessica's leadership, we are looking at the Ombudsman's Office and others that have higher cost lease space to move in that facility and look for that. But I do think it's a discussion that the legislators in those seats next year should be part of the process on, which is why I ask for your consideration today in approving the one-year extension versus going out for a new lease.
And then just to follow up, I understand the drive, but, I mean, we've got folks that live in Hope and Girdwood that make, you know, a much longer drive to go to their Anchorage LIO that are represented by a House rep and a Senate rep, too. So I understand that, but I just think as we go forward, it's always been the plan when we had the 716 that Eagle River wouldn't be. Now we've got a new building, and we're pushing, we continue to push off the fact that we have the standalone Eagle River closing LIOs around the state. I just think it's something that we should have an exit plan for, and if it takes this year to do it, it just seems like we talked this, we had the same conversation when we did 716 about moving Eagle River, and it just gets continually pushed back and pushed back. So I just want to put that on the record.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a comment.
Yeah. I was just going to comment that there's 400.
Mr. Chairman?
I don't have a big problem with keeping the Anchorage LIO, which is the river LIO, just to accommodate the very large population.
Representative Drummond?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm hearing street noise. I'm not sure if somebody on the phone has their phone unmuted and is in their car or something. I think this is more of a long-term discussion, and I almost want to say that even though it happens to be in my district, the purchase of the Benson building might not have been properly considered in light of centralizing facilities in Anchorage. For example, when the Anchorage School District moved its facilities and consolidated, that organization serves from Girdwood to Eklutna, and they located their main building very far east in Anchorage, and that would have been much more conducive to a commute by folks from Eagle River than the location of the Benson building right now. That's a significant amount more distance for folks to drive all the way to West Anchorage. But I think that needs to be a longer-term discussion. In the meantime, I think I understand the hazards of the drive in from Eagle River and Chugiak, and I would support leaving the Eagle River office space at this time, because you do have to serve constituents right there. And, of course, the school district has schools in every neighborhood, which is mostly what folks want to do. Going to the main building is generally for meetings or administrative issues that are not school-related. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any other discussion? With that, we have the motion. We call the roll.
Representative Clayman.
Yes.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Millett.
No.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Senator Machicki?
Yes.
Chair Guttenberg?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman votes yes.
Yes. Thank you, Senator. We show you as yes. We have 10 yeas, 2 nays.
Thank you. Next order of business on the agenda is the Hagan Associates Security Camera. Ms. Gary, would you fill us in on this?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Jessica Geary, Executive Director, Legislative Affairs Agency. So back in 2015, a security subcommittee was formed under Legislative Council, and former Representative Bob Herron was the chair of that subcommittee. A lot of discussion ensued. I wasn't a part of those discussions per se, but Hayton Associates was hired to handle the construction administration and the design of a new Capitol security system, and that's for the whole Capitol complex. So it's state-of-the-art security cameras so that our security officers can view what's going on around the building, address safety concerns. I think we all are aware what security cameras are used for. So the project kind of there were some unanticipated issues that arose when Alcan, who won the bid through a competitive bid process, came in and began work on the system. There are some issues that arose mainly due to the technology that was in place in the building and what was required for to run the security cameras. And I might note that I have Tim Banaszak on the line in case I go off into some land that isn't correct as far as the technical speak goes. But and then, of course, we remember. And so this project kept going along. Hayton Associates ended up having to be much more involved. So in 2016, an amendment was approved. It was a small dollar amount, $5,015. And that was to help get them through that particular part of the process. And then we all remember special sessions. I think 2017 we were in session for pretty much the whole year. So there wasn't access to the building. And in the background, they kept on doing work. Hayton Associates, because they had designed the system, and because of how technical it was, there had to end up being a lot more involvement by Hayton Associates than what was originally planned on. And they made it their mission in the beginning that they would give us a completed system that worked and it met all the specifications. And so they ended up sort of having to act a bit as the project director, from what I understand. And so when I came into this role and started examining what projects we had going on, I basically discovered that this project wasn't being managed properly. And so so I had Tim Banaszak sort of take over the project director portion. And then everything just moved along, finished up. We have a working system now. Everybody's really happy with everything. But Hayton Associates went way over the hours that they had originally contracted to do. So basically what we're left with is owing them $23,000 on top of the original contracted amount. So we're coming back to the table to ask for those additional funds so that we could pay Hayton Associates and close out the contract. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or, as I said, Tim is on the line, and he can.
Okay, so this appropriation completely closes the project. Well, this is done. It's all completely done.
Correct, except for any warranty issues that might come up, of course.
And Did you see or did Mr. Banaszak perceive the additional billing as justified?
Yes, and both Dina Strong, myself, and Tim were heavily involved working with the contractor, both Alcan and the engineer, and they definitely went above and beyond and were pretty much available during every aspect of the final months of the project.
Comments?
I have a question. So the Alcan bid on this, and they are an electrical company, correct? And their bid was to install the security cameras. I presume that they assessed the situation before they put the bid in.
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, they did assess the situation before they put in the bid. And I don't know, as I wasn't involved in the details back then, but from what I can gather is that it was not, the project wasn't properly managed, and that caused, so it wasn't necessarily like you can pin it all on the contractor, or all on the engineer, or all on the agency. It was kind of a collaboration of missteps that caused the project to exceed. So I think probably a little bit of Alcan being at fault, but they did, you know, every time we said, you know, this isn't what we asked for, they would come in, work with us, and have lots of meetings and making sure that the system was what we needed it to be, which is why Haight & Associates ended up being involved so much more, because they designed the system for Alcan to install. So,
hello.
Well, thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
I guess that my point is, this is what they do. This is their business. Mm-hmm. So for them to run into unanticipated issues is difficult for me to understand, mm-hmm. when that is, in fact, what they do for their business.
Mr. Chairman, this is Tim. Could I weigh in on something to help with that question, perhaps?
Okay, on that point, go ahead.
Okay, through the chair, Representative Drummond, this is Tim Banaszak, the FC manager, and for the agency. So part of the Haight & Associates component of this project is design and construction administration. So in these projects where you've got an engineering firm that's designing the work, the project, you have a organization like Alcan, who's actually implementing the system, and then you have hardware manufacturers that are providing the hardware, and then you've got a software company providing the software. There's a component that Jessica referred to around project management. There's also the component of construction administration, and typically the engineering firm will provide the role of construction administration to make sure the vendor, the manufacturers, deploy the system according to the specifications. That's usually not a fixed fee, but it's an estimated number of hours. And when you reach, if you run into issues and reach that cap, then you would go request additional hours to be able to do that. So that number is kind of an estimate, and it's a normal part of that. I think there are some lessons learned here, as was mentioned. There's some shared responsibility. Traditionally or typically, you'd want to do a cease and desist until we got additional hours. Everyone wanted to make sure this project was successful, and so that's where these extra costs were from. But your point is absolutely well taken, and hopefully that provides a little clarity of how that construction administration hours works.
Before I get to Senator Hoffman, the project overall for Alcan, did that come in on budget?
Mr. Chairman, it did.
Okay. So it was the management, the extended sessions, and technical things that we had to force them to do better. So Mr. Vanizak was explaining how that budget worked, I mean, how that bid worked. They drew a management fee with an estimated number of hours to oversee the project. The contractor actually came in on bid, but the management side of it was extended beyond the estimated hours or bid costs.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And the contractor, Alcan, had a set amount that they could not exceed based on the RFP, whereas Tim mentioned the engineer was based on an engineer's estimate, and then they exceeded those hours, which is by quite a bit.
Well, between the management fee, would probably be the lowest exceeded. Senator Hoffman and Senator McKinnon. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand, you know, the process that they're going through, but if I were providing the services, I would be a little bit nervous in proceeding if I wasn't going to be able to get reimbursed for those, the services that I provided. So I'm wondering, was there any assurances given by the administration that they would get paid, or why would they proceed knowing that that they may not get reimbursed?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, both Tina Strong and I had discussions with one of the managing partners at Hayton Associates, and we explained to them the process, and we told them that we could not promise that they could get paid, and but that we would try. Their goal is to have a successful business relationship with the agency, and that at the end of the day, the most important thing to them was to make sure the project was complete and that we had a working security system.
And my final comment, I guess, is that that may be true, but this sets a very bad precedent if the council approves, because if they feel that they have a good working relationship, they may be able to try to do this again.
Can I comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, this is not a practice that I would support in the future, and I don't foresee myself, while I'm in charge, allowing this to happen. Again, this is not normally we would come to the table before work begins. As Tim mentioned earlier, stop work until funding's approved, and then come back. So, and of course that depends on how you word the initial approval of the project. But this is definitely not ideal.
And we have an example of that later on in the agenda. Senator,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
No, I just said thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just point out that the contract amendment that's being asked for is almost 50% of the entire project. And so I would just align myself with Senator Hoffman's comments that these are not business practices. And I wonder if we don't approve today what the ramification is for the legislature, if Ms. Geary could talk to us about that. And not that I don't support it, because if there was work done that the state owes money for, that's fine. But in my entire career serving on the Anchorage Assembly, we watched change orders come through, and we had no good controls in place to stop people from overcharging state agencies or local governments because we're caught in a public interest position, and then having individual businesses saying that we're bad partners when we actually get an estimate on a job for $54,000 in round numbers, and now we're going to have a job that's closer to $75,000-$80,000. So something went wrong somewhere. And so if we didn't approve it, if you could just walk us through that process about if there's a legal process in there. I know you're making a recommendation to pay it, and you've adequately provided reasonable explanations on why everything is before us as it is today. But what happens if we vote no?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, that is a really great question. This is a public meeting, and It's not ideal to be in a situation where we have work that's been performed and we vote to not pay the contractor. That doesn't bode well for our relationship with private businesses. And I know that because I talked with the owner of this business in particular, that our relationship with them is going to be okay, but what about the other businesses that are watching and who might already be wary of doing business with us? And so I think, you know, one of the things that that I didn't necessarily want to bring up something about an employee who's no longer with the agency, but it's my understanding that there might have been a promise that was made that there was no authority to make that promise, such as, oh, keep working, we'll get you paid sort of situation. And it's unfortunate. But I'm coming behind trying to clean up the mess, make sure everybody's paid, everything is buttoned up, and I think that's as far as I can comment on this.
Sure. Senator Kelly.
And maybe you mentioned, I didn't catch it. Is there a timing issue on this? Because what I would like to do is stop this from going forward, and maybe we have to talk because I don't know, $23,000, which is not going to break the bank. But someone mentioned before, we don't want to be in the business of seeing it business as usual is you have an overrun, you just pay it.
Right.
Because somebody made a mistake. Oh, gosh. I know you run a better shop. Don't. That wasn't a criticism, but we want to make sure that there's more to do in the future. Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Totally. I mean, you invest more time in this than I. If you think we need to move forward on this, then that's fine. But if we can talk.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have one comment in response. And when you say we don't want to be, we mean the state, be seen as not paying our bills, I would say this is more of a reflection on how they handled their business as opposed to the state not paying their debts. So I do have to kind of take exception to that.
And through the chair, Representative Stutes, that is why I brought up what I did, and that it's my understanding that there was a promise to get paid.
In follow-up, and I don't want to get into a situation, but if they're in business, you know you get it in writing. I mean, it's pretty simple, any kind of contractual relationship and when there's a change. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, I would like
to, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, hold on. I would like to remind people that there's a lot of background noise. So if you could deal with that, as bad as it is here, I think it's worse for other people online. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman,
brief it is.
Just a minute to turn it.
Okay, thank you. So we are going to hold this issue until move it to the bottom of the agenda and take it up at that time, possibly in executive session, but we will determine that when we get there. So item 6C, Hayton Associates, will be moved to the bottom of the agenda. Next issue, we will go to executive session at the end of that, at the end of the before we adjourn. So the next issue is interim memoriams. I want to bring that up. It's something that I've been working on. There's not going to be a vote required, but I wanted to, and I've been doing it kind of on the sly for years during the interim when somebody would pass away, and it would mean something great to the grieving family. I would do a memoriam, never say that it was the legislature, but hedge the words. And I try to come up with a process where the presiding officers could give the authority to the ledge council to do only memoriams during the interim. I think it is an important thing for people to do, but we can't do it because of some of the statutory restraints. So we will come up with language for the next legislative council in the legislature to adopt the process or not, where they could do interim memoriams. And I think the language would be giving, I think it's a uniform rule change, actually. We're giving the presiding officer the ability to transfer that authority during the interim to do memoriams. We just did something for Bob Gillum, which I think was appropriate. I think it's something that, from my experience, that families really appreciate. And we will bring that up later. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that issue, I just noted on my memo from you that another issue that I've heard, if you're going to look at a uniform rule change, is on the co-prime sponsors, at least at the start of session. And that's it was a huge issue for legal in clarity and finding pathways. And so we removed that ability for legislators to do co-primes because of some problems there. But if you're going to look at uniform rules, I have seen legislators multiple times wanting to be co-primes on a particular topic and unable to do so. So I would just say that while you're looking at that, you may consider working with Ledge Legal to see if there's any way that co-primes could be allowed, like at the start of the session or within the first 10 days of session. And obviously you have to designate a prime with legal that can make changes for so that they have a singular point of contact. But publicly, sometimes legislators like to come through together with prime sponsorships on important pieces of legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And this will be something we'll roll forward to the next legislature and give them some ideas from experience. The next item is the...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Senator
In case you're in the middle of a conversation, I'm out of time at 10:30. This is Senator Machicki, so I'll quietly sign off at 10:30.
Thank you, Senator. Next item is the Capitol cooling system. This is a informational from Mr. Banaszak. We are not at this point able to put a motion for a bid on the floor because we don't have the numbers back from the engineer, but wanted to keep the committee up to date on what is happening and possibly have a meeting in October that's just on this issue to approve a number for this contract. Mr. Banaszak, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Could you brief us on this issue so that we understand what it is and what we might be voting on?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate a little time with the council to talk about this. Certainly there's been a lot of discussion about costs and reductions, and I think in that spirit we wanted to bring this cost avoidance initiative forward to you, Mr. Chairman, and the council and the membership. The issue that we're running into is, first of all, there's a memo that I drafted. I don't know if members have that handy. I'll try to, there's a couple of points in there I'll refer to if members do have that regarding the Capitol cooling system. So PDC Engineering completed a professional assessment, and as you noted earlier in the outset of this agenda item, they're preparing a bid design packet to address five specific locations in the Capitol that include three telecommunication critical network infrastructure rooms that are currently overheating. And in addition, we've got our security office that remains, provides, or is somewhat exposed. A lot of our security activities are exposed because the door has to remain open and finally our supply office. And in that memo, if you have it handy, there's a table that kind of gives the five specific locations and the temperature ranges that are in there. It's probably helpful for members of the council to be aware that despite the efforts of our building maintenance folks or technical teams to try to use low-cost ventilation methods, ad hoc, vents through the ceiling, fans, there's $400,000 of equipment infrastructure, telecommunications infrastructure equipment that's operating in an overheated condition 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's a second graph in the memo that shows that for every 18 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Celsius of overheating, the equipment degradation costs more than double. And this project, if it were to be approved and go forward, would bring each of those five locations within the ideal temperature operating range of 68 to 72 degrees. Part of the packet, Mr. Chairman and members, included for reference, if folks want to dig into that a little bit, is the PDC Engineering's design and fee proposal and cooling system design recommendation for the ground and first floor system. There are the locations, the four locations on the lower area that would be all plumbed into one system. And then there's also two options for the fourth floor system that would cool that area. Those two options, one is to put a complete new system in. The other is we have some residual capacity in one of our cooling systems, and so we are recommending we go the less expensive route to use that residual capacity, ultimately reducing the overall cost of the project. As you noted earlier, Mr. Chairman, PDC Engineering anticipates having ready by October 1st the invitation to bid design package. The agency would then right away immediately issue an invitation to bid. Once that 21-day bid period closes, we would need to come back to council and request project authorization in advance of any contracts or costs being approved. And then finally, if you look at, there's a third graphic which is kind of a, provides a conceptual but very aggressive schedule for the project that does include the bid process, the legal review, the approval request to legislative council, the contract award and completion date with the goal of being completed by session start in January. And so finally, in summary, as you kind of mentioned, Mr. Chairman, at this point, this is informational to provide three things. One, make the council aware of the critical infrastructure overheating issues that we're dealing with. Second is the equipment degradation as a result of that. And then third, our remediation plan to deal with that. We would request a follow-up opportunity to present the project to the council members once the design is completed, the vendor responses, and the costs are known specifically. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions you or the members may have.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that thorough coverage of what's in the memo. Mr. Benizek, I'm looking on page two of the memo, and when we look at the fourth floor system options, I was concerned we just put a new roof on the Capitol, and one of the options is for putting a separate ventilation system on the roof. And so I was wondering how that might impact our warranty on the roof, or if that's just not a concern for an outdoor unit.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, it's a very good question and definitely a concern. And that weighed into our decision to not put a new unit on the roof, but to use the existing condenser that's on the roof and plumb into that, being that there's residual capacity. The other locations, as you've probably seen in that memo, puts it all outside on a concrete slab. So this work will not impact that roof in any way. If we went with the option to put a new condenser on the roof, certainly we would try to avoid issues with penetrating the roof, but that is a risk.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The memo notes a Plan A and a Plan B, and so on Plan A, when I read Plan A and tying it into the existing cooling system, what you'll do, what could happen based on the analysis that you're going to hear from the engineers, is that we could overtax that system. So, yeah, it's kind of difficult either way. We're going to have to face something that we don't like. I would just ask council members to watch this one on the fourth floor, because they're the fourth floor gets hot already for those of people who have offices in that area. And so if you're tying into that cooling system for the others, the last line says, however, this would also eliminate any future cooling capacities of the existing system if we tie into that one at that point. So I hope that we don't stress it in a way that is going to cause other problems for other maintenance. I don't like the option B of going into the roof either, so I'll wait until the engineers have their final say on which path they're going to take. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I certainly don't want to build anything that already has a capacity and put more capacity on it, because the building is not really conducive to all the climate, the weather changes between summer and winter. Representative Drummond.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make an observation. I didn't realize that the first floor telecom room, which I believe is inside the office that I currently occupy, is one of the biggest problems in the building. I also understand why my office gets hot, because it's got a cooker in the middle of it. And I don't know where the hot air is going. I'm sure Mr. Banasek can give us an idea. But in relation to the graph with the temperatures, the operating temperatures on the bottom of the first page of the memo, am I reading that correctly, that the first floor telecom room requires $40,000 a year or creates $40,000 a year in deferred maintenance? That little room is creating that much of costs for us?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, so that graph is based on temperature equipment lifespan degradation based on the heat temperature. So with that door shut, that temperature spikes over 100 degrees, and we obviously can't operate that way. So as a result, we're blowing a lot of that hot air into your office, as you noted, to try to keep that temperature down. So right now, we've got the doors open into your office. We've got, it's a technical term, but about 3 tons of BTU heat pumping into that office. We've got 3 fans bolted to that rack, one in the ceiling, trying to blow all that air out of there to try to keep that down under 96 degrees. If we shut those doors at those temperatures, though, equipment's failing, we're shutting power supplies down, and that's to give you a sense of scale. Each one of those closets has about $100,000 worth of equipment in them. Yours is one of them. It's in your office, and we appreciate you being willing to tolerate us coming in and out of there. And at that rate, that's the failure rate that's on there. We try to do what we can to mitigate and shut some equipment off. But, yes, that's what the industry depreciation is on equipment operating at those temperatures. And, again, that's taking a 72-degree temperature base to 90 degrees and then up to 96. So we're having to replace equipment at a greater frequency than we should have to. We'd like to, for this equipment, depreciate it out over 7 years, we're having to depreciate that over up to 5 years or down to 5 years in some of these locations.
Well, Mr. Chairman, could I continue?
Go ahead, Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Now I understand why when I turn the thermostat down in my office, there is no change. And all I can say is I'm really grateful that we can actually open the windows in the offices. That closet, Mr. Banachek, has there's hallway space behind it that it seems to me the closet could almost be expanded into the hallway and away from, you know, and just give yourself more more space, because there's a corner there at the entrance to the adjacent committee room 106 that could possibly give you some additional space. And I see if the proposal is to put a cooling unit inside that room on what is it, page 2 of the proposal from PDC engineers. It says you would be putting an indoor cooling unit wall mounted inside that small room. Is that the proposal?
That's through the chair. That's correct, Representative Drummond. So the actual main condenser that does the cooling will be outside, and then what would be deployed is through plumbing, you'd have one of these small cassettes that actually delivers the cold air through the plumbing, much like your refrigerator might work, or an air conditioning unit, where the unit's outside, and then the cold air is being distributed through that cassette. We have one there, one in the telecom room on the ground floor, the security office, supply office, so that your condenser's not in the room. So our engineer tried to avoid any kind of structural retrofit, and it has is looking at units that will fit in that room within the space that we have and avoid construction costs, but certainly appreciate your comments about having a little room to work with, and it was something that we kind of talked about but didn't pursue any redesign. We were trying to avoid that. Thank you.
I understand. Mr. Chairman, may I just continue?
Go ahead.
Thank you. It's difficult in a building that old to adapt to 21st century. Yes, sir.
If you're going to come back with engineering ideas, why don't you just put them in writing and give them to Mr. Banachek? Because we don't even have the engineer report yet. So they
Understood.
Can write that in.
I'll hold that.
Liar.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you. And with that, we will expect we might have a meeting next. The point is to have this work done before session starts, so there's no disruption in the Capitol building. And Mr. Banachek, I hope when you come back, you give us a life expectancy of not just what the system is, but whether the expansion into the use of the next 20 or 30 years. The computers might be getting smaller, but they might be getting hotter and faster also, so that we have a good idea that we're not building to capacity, that we're building out for 20 years of capacity as well. But hopefully that'll come back with the engineers, and you'll have that for us. And we will, hopefully it'll be a half-hour meeting the next time we meet, and we'll just vote on that issue. Anything else? Ms. Banachek, any other questions? None?
Nothing from my end, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that, and your points are well taken, and we'll have those discussions with the engineer to make sure that we right-size this for today's needs, but then in the future. So we'll address that in our next packet to the council members.
Thank you. Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask for a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. Back? Okay, we are back online, and what we're going to do is we're going to put the cooling system, we're going to move beyond it because we doesn't take a vote, and we will,
watch out, pull your paperwork.
Oh. Okay, I move that the Ledge Council go into an executive session under Uniform Rule 22B1 and 3, discussion of subject and matters that may by law be required to be confidential. Any registered not on the council are welcome to stay. The following staff may stay: Jessica Geary, Tim Banizak, Megan Wallace, Christopher Koneman, Eliana Salengeet, Heather Carpenter, Julie Lucky, Tina Strong, and Ann Ritgers. With that, we will take a pause and clear the room and make sure anybody that is online that is not to be will get offline.
Mr. Chairman?
Harriet, Representative Drummond.
That's all right. You realize I couldn't hear you when you went to the at ease. And do those of us who are online have to hang up and call back in?
No, you're good.
Is that the cleanest way to do it?
No, stay on. You're good, Representative Drummond. So I'm going to call another at ease while we clean up. We have a little faux pas here, and we're going to pause at ease, and we will come back. Ready, at ease. Okay, we are back in and on the record, and I want to add Susan Wallen to the list. And without objection going into executive session, we are now in executive session as we clear the room. And okay, we'll take 2 minutes to do the technical aspects of it, and we will continue. So we are in executive session and at pause. We are out of executive session, and we are back online. I think we need a roll call vote. Who's online? Can we please take the roll call? Thank you, Ms. Kiesel.
To reestablish the quorum.
Is it Kiesel or Kiesel?
Kiesel.
Okay.
Just like diesel.
Okay, got it.
Representative Klayman.
I'm here.
Representative Edgman.
Here.
Representative Millett.
Here.
Representative Ortiz.
Here.
Representative Stutes.
Here.
Representative Drummond.
Here.
Senator Coghill.
Here.
Senator Hoffman.
Here.
Senator Kelly.
Here.
Senator McKinnon.
Here.
Senator Machicki is offline. Chair Guttenberg.
Here. And the winner is?
11 present.
Thank you. Senator McKinnon, would you restate the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The motion was, I move that Legislative Council approve the amendment to Height and Associate Incorporated's contract in the amount of $23,000. $64.67.
Is there any more discussion? Hearing none, call the roll.
That was my name. Klayman votes yes.
Yes, it was. Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Yes.
Representative Millett.
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Yes.
Representative Stutes.
Yes.
Representative Drummond.
Yes.
Senator Coghill.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator Kelly.
Yes.
Senator McKinnon.
Yes.
Chair Guttenberg.
Yes.
11 yeas.
Thank you. And there was a request to move item C, the session per diem policy discussion, to the next meeting. And we'll do that. That was whatever action we do take will take effect next legislative session anyway. And the purpose of doing that at this point was to advance a recommendation to the next legislature to take action, because the per diem doesn't go into effect until then. So we are not. It is not time sensitive for us. But it's something that we should address for the next legislature. Is there any other business to come before the Legislative Council? Anybody else? Anybody online? With that, I will say that we are adjourned and thank the members for participating and thank them for coming. Thank you.